You're listening to the Talk of Green Bay.
WGBW 1590 AM Denmark. W250 CB Green Bay.
And always streaming on the Civic Media app.
A primetime address from President Biden last night calling for continued support for Israel against the militant group Hamas. He wants Congress to approve $14 billion in U.S. aid for Israel, another $60 billion for Ukraine as it fights off Russia.
The president is making this massive funding request of Congress, but for now, this isn't going to be going anywhere. The House is still at a standstill, unable to get anything done until Republicans finally settle on a new speaker.
ABC's Mary Bruce. Many believe an Israeli ground invasion into Gaza is imminent. There have been new Israeli airstrikes today, and the militant group Hezbollah has been firing rockets into Israel. Nearly 5,000 people killed on both sides. On Capitol Hill, Congressman Jim Jordan says he's not finished, vowing he'll move forward with his plan to be House Speaker. Jordan failed to get enough votes in the first two rounds of voting. This is ABC News. The U.S. soldier who voluntarily entered North Korea is now facing criminal charges.
Army Private Travis King caused an international incident over the summer when he ran across the DMZ and entered North Korea. He was held there until he was released by North Korea last month, and the 23-year-old was returned to Texas. He has now been detained and is facing multiple criminal charges, including desertion and assault. The AP reports there are 8 counts in total, including possessing sexual images of a child.
ABC's Brian Clark. An investigation underway after a Maryland Circuit Court judge was shot to death. Deputies found Judge Andrew Wilkinson in his driveway suffering from gunshot wounds. Some Chick-fil-A customers will soon get part of a $4 million settlement after the restaurant chain agreed to pay up over its delivery fees. Customers say Chick-fil-A offered free or low-cost delivery, but then drove up the price of the food. Liz Landers, ABC News.
For the Talk of Green Bay News, I'm Pete Schwabe. Here's what you need to know. Wisconsin Public Service is teaming up with law enforcement to stop scams. Yesterday, WPS said they will partner with local sheriff's offices in northeast and north central Wisconsin to help make people aware of utility scams on social media. Authorities say warning signs you're being scammed could include receiving a call with a fake caller ID and the words Wisconsin Public Service on the display, threatening to shut off a victim's service in a short amount of time, or demanding immediate payment through a prepaid debit card, Venmo-type app, or cryptocurrency. If you feel you've been a victim of a scam, please contact your local police. One person is homeless after an apartment catches fire in Green Bay. Green Bay Metro Fire was called shortly after 7:30 a.m. Wednesday morning to the 2000 block of Sycamore Drive. Officials suspect the fire was caused by candles that were left unattended. No one was injured.
Pete Schwabe, WGBW 97.9 News.
Trunk or treat! I'm going trunk or treating!
Terry, you gotta be talking about one of the Halloween events coming up at both Green Bay area YMCAs, Saturday, October 28th. It's fun for the whole family and includes games, a costume contest, and of course, Halloween treats, my favorite.
Oh, and Todd, it's happening at the East Side YMCA from 1 to 4, then the West Side YMCA from 4 to 7, but the trunk or treat? Well, that one's only on the East Side between 1 and 2. Decorate your car and the kids get treats from your trunk.
Sounds like a lot of fun, and it's all free. Would you rather help out? You can volunteer for any of the Halloween events on Saturday, October 28th at both Green Bay YMCAs.
Find all the information at greenbayymca.org. greenbayymca.org. Keeping you connected to your community, the Talk of Green Bay, WGBW 1590 AM, 97.9 FM, and the Civic Media Radio Network.
The Talk of Green Bay, 1590 AM and 97.9 FM, WGBW program is broadcast from the Bug Tussle Studios.
Bug Tussle, keeping you connected to the world around you.
Have you noticed bad behavior has become normalized at interscholastic athletic events? Some fans seem angry. They lack civility toward one another. Some even get aggressive and unruly. Time out! What is going on? This has to stop. Let's not forget, school sports aren't just about winning. And they're definitely not an excuse to take your frustrations out on the official or the opponent. They're about teaching lessons, like perseverance, respect, and empathy, so students can learn and grow as people, not just as players. We all have a role to play in setting a good example for our students and teaching them these important values. So fans, it's time to step up your game and behave positively at Interscholastic Athletic Events in Wisconsin.
This message presented by the WIAA and the Wisconsin Athletic Directors Association.
Hi, we're the Goo Goo Dolls. We're fortunate that our daughters have what they need to grow and learn. But that isn't the case for nearly 13 million kids in the U.S. that struggle with hunger.
Childhood hunger is a heartbreaking reality that Feeding America is working to change. Each year, the Feeding America network of food banks rescues billions of pounds of good food that would have gone to waste and provides it to families and children in need.
You can help kids in need in your community by visiting feedingamerica.org.
Brought to you by Feeding America and the Ad Council.
Hey, son, how are you feeling?
I'm fine, Pops.
What's on your mind?
I can't explain it.
When your kid can't find the language, find the lyrics. Start a conversation at soundedouttogether.org. Brought to you by Ed Council and Pivotal Ventures.
State's latest headlines and stories. Weekday mornings from 6 till 8 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the Civic Media app.
All right, welcome back to the Earl Ingram Show. As always, you can join us at 844-967-2789. It's 844-967-2789. Text us that same number. It's Friday. That means Fridays with Sandy Williams. So, Sandy, the president spoke yesterday. Let me just read a couple paragraphs quickly about what President Joe Biden had to say. President Biden delivered an impassioned Oval Office speech Thursday, urging Americans to stand by Israel and Ukraine as they face ruthless but very different adversaries, asserting that the world is at an inflection point in history and making the case for billions in aid to both countries at a time when such assistance is under attack from a variety of quarters. Hamas and Russian President Vladimir Putin represent different threats, but they share this in common. They both want to completely annihilate a neighboring democracy, Biden said. American leadership is what holds the world together, he added. American values are what make us a partner that other nations want to work with. To put all that at risk if we walk away from Ukraine, if we turn our backs on Israel, is just not worth it. Sandy, you say what?
Well, I think all of this problem that we have in Congress right now with respect to unity about our foreign affairs is the result of the fact that we failed as a country to formulate our foreign affairs in the public eye and subject to public debate. And we don't have the unity that we would otherwise have, you know, if we went to war in Vietnam and had actually declared war in the way that Congress normally declared war, according to our founding fathers. A great deal of unity results from that, and people get together behind a war effort when it's declared because of the commitment and the requirement. Now we're kind of backing into cactus bushes here and there across the world without that kind of unity in the process for formulating that policy. And I keep coming back to this real politic concept, which is essentially that we need to be sure that when we commit to something internationally, particularly from a military standpoint, we're doing it based on a unified public consensus that can be counted upon. And whereas we aren't committing troops to Ukraine, we definitely have helped Ukraine become pregnant in a war, okay? Because we basically gave Ukraine implicit backing at the time that they would otherwise be negotiating with Russia. They had an option, which was to negotiate with Russia and become something much closer to a lapchild ally of Russia. But we basically gave them a reason to sound reason to believe that we would stand behind them and that they needn't do that. And the fact that they didn't do that obviously then resulted in an unlawful act by Russia, this invasion of Ukraine, which now we are behind Ukraine. Ukraine has lost hundreds of thousands of people. And there is a certain level of moral commitment we've created for ourselves by this process of backing up into the cactus bush, which is our policy in Ukraine. And now we have a moral dilemma. And I think it is true that internationally, if we back off now from the kind of commitment we've had to Ukraine, it will jeopardize the American, the trustworthiness of America in international affairs. So is this a lessons learned? Yes, this is a very tough lessons learned, because I think what we've done is created a pregnancy within America's foreign policy of a moral obligation to continue helping Ukraine, which is going to be very expensive.
So, Sandy, I also couldn't help but overhear President Biden say we're giving also X amount of money to Taiwan to protect. And so I'm like, so why would he add that? Why are we sending money to Taiwan to fend off, to supposedly fend off China? It makes no sense.
There's this view of this domino theory that if we're weak here, that'll happen there. But again, we still haven't developed a consensus about our policy with respect to Taiwan. We did have a consensus in 1979. We passed an act in Congress that recognized a one China principle. There we said basically we would only provide support to Taiwan in the situation in which China might militarily try to change the status quo. But the more we do to fan the flames of China by getting involved with Taiwan, the more likely we make it that China would feel a need to do something militarily with Taiwan to exercise its sovereignty over it. So again, this is a yin-yang thing. If we were keeping our hands off Taiwan and letting them negotiate with China as to how it is the one China principle will ultimately be solved in vis-a-vis China and Taiwan, it could happen without warfare.
Well, Sandy, the point is, why are we even talking about China? Why did that even come up? It's difficult enough to deal with Ukraine and Iran. I mean, excuse me, and
Hamas.
And Hamas.
Yeah.
Then let's now turn around and add that. I mean, that to me was clearly unnecessary. The other part of all of this, Sandy, is he's leading us and he's talking about war, and you keep talking. How many different fronts are we talking about?
Well,
and why?
Yeah, you know, back in the day, we used to talk about a defense budget that was committed at a level that would allow us to fight wars on three fronts. What kind of a country, first of all, thinks about fighting three wars at once and plans on it? No one else in the world does. It's the reason why we spend 10 or 12 or 15 times as much on our defense as any other country in the world. In fact, I just read that Russia's on the eve of potentially spending a record amount on their defense. They're going to reach something like $100 billion during this period of war for them.
Right.
Whereas we're spending in the neighborhood of $900 billion every year, year in and year out. The amount of expenditure we make is exorbitant, to say the least. And our foreign policy is something that we talk about with bravado, but we don't really get down to brass tacks and have the tough discussion about it, particularly one that's enlightened by people who are highly seasoned. And my only concern about our current president is that he does come out of the neocon kind of concept
right.
of the Pax Americana and the ability of America to, in fact, his speech yesterday was all about America needing to be the savior of the world, essentially. And of course, being the savior of the world is a very huge project and a very expensive one.
So we're part of NATO, okay? And so the rest of NATO is not saying this is what we're going to do. They're not making those commitments.
Well, they are. They are with respect to Ukraine.
Right.
But with respect to China, no. And there are people in Southeast Asia who are worried about China. But China is reactive to the West, and the West is reactive to China. And we have to understand that this is a dynamic that can be moderated, and something like detente can slow this way down. We learned that in the Cold War. We went through a period of about a 35-year detente with the Soviet Union that saved both sides quite a bit of money.
So NATO is not committed to to Israel as we are. So we now alone have this commitment to Israel. So we're committed to that. We're committed to now Ukraine. If something else happens with another NATO ally, again, we're committed to those kind of things.
Well, NATO is itself an alliance that between the members of NATO, and it doesn't really extend to the policies of each NATO country vis-a-vis non-members of NATO. And it only and only if a NATO country itself is invaded are the articles of NATO requiring that the parties line up together, okay? So if we're going to have a policy about Taiwan, or if we're going to have a policy about Israel, it is not required that the NATO countries be in alignment with us on those. And in fact, they aren't.
All right, let's go to Ken from Sturgeon Bay. Good morning to you, Ken. You say what?
Good morning. I'm just looking at some stats here. The U.S. has given Ukraine $42 billion. The rest of the world has given $17 billion. Why is that?
Well, actually, that isn't true. So that's the first reason why it isn't. Why that isn't true at all. The EU countries combined have given more money to Ukraine than the United States has, and I think you just need to find a new data source. We have given a bunch of money to Ukraine, but the money flowing to Ukraine and the ad flowing to Ukraine has been a unified effort. The United States has given more than any other single country by quite a bit, and you might be looking at that comparison. 17 might be the largest number that any single country out of the EU has given Ukraine. But I think you'll find that if you look into data, the EU in total has given more money to Ukraine than the United States by quite a factor, in fact. I think.
So Joe Biden is, President Biden is talking about $60 billion this time around to Ukraine, $40 billion to Israel.
Mm. Those numbers
officials have been considering a package that could cost as much as $100 billion. This is the Washington Post this morning. Although that figure remains in flux, according to the people briefed on the matter. $60 billion to Ukraine, $40 billion to Israel.
Oh, so $60 billion more to Ukraine.
Yes.
Oh, and the $40 I'm sure, involves the Gazan relief as well, probably.
You're talking about, $100 million.
Million.
To outside Gaza. Of that $100 billion that they're talking about, there's $100 million
going to the Gaza,
going towards the Palestinian relief effort. So, we're in a quagmire, Sandy. Is it safe to say that?
Well, financially, I mean, we should understand that dollars that large, if we look at it through the local prism again, $100 billion would fund child daycare across the country. Okay. It would fund a variety of things that we need locally. So we should understand that there is a trade-off here, and that the policies we undertake that involve a great deal of money being expended abroad does have an impact locally. And I'm not saying we shouldn't expend that money, but at least when we have a budget talk at the dinner table, we ought to be talking about the priorities and what the implications of spending here are. You know, if this, then that. If this, then not that. Kind of a conversation.
Well, and especially when we say we can't afford those things.
Yes.
But then we turn around and find the money for this. Got to go to a break. 844-967-2789. It's Friday. That means Friday's my co-host, Sandy Williams. You can join us. We'll be right back.
Just you and I. Nobody around, baby. Just you and I.
Have you noticed bad behavior has become normalized at interscholastic athletic events? Some fans seem angry. They lack civility toward one another. Some even get aggressive and unruly. Time out! What is going on? This has to stop. Let's not forget, school sports aren't just about winning. And they're definitely not an excuse to take your frustrations out on the official or the opponent. They're about teaching lessons like perseverance, respect, and empathy, so students can learn and grow as people, not just as players. We all have a role to play in setting a good example for our students and teaching them these important values. So fans, it's time to step up your game and behave positively at Interscholastic Athletic Events in Wisconsin.
This message presented by the WIAA and the Wisconsin Athletic Directors Association.
My name is Teresa Barber. I was in the United States Navy, and I served overseas in the Middle East and Africa. Early on in my career, I had a commander that taught our suicide prevention training, and the very next day, he took his own life. 90% of suicide attempts involving a gun are fatal. My way of continuing my service is to help protect my community by being a responsible gun owner and by storing firearms safely. Store all your guns securely. Help stop suicide.
Brought to you by End Family Fire and the Ad Council.
Here's your updated forecast. Partly cloudy this afternoon with daytime highs approaching 58. Northwesterly winds 10 to 15 miles an hour. Chance for scattered showers tonight. Lows level off around 41. Overcast. Scattered rain showers likely tomorrow. High temperatures reach up to 51. Cloudy skies. Mainly clear skies and quiet Sunday with daytime highs approaching 51. 56. Chance for scattered rain showers Monday. For Civic Media, I'm meteorologist Ray Miller. Right now, it's 49.
Mino and the Mayor in the Morning. And the talk of Green Bay all day long. 1590 AM and 97.9 FM WGBW.
Your home for the Devil's Advocates.
Weekday afternoons from 4 until 6.
On The Shaw. 540 AM and 101.1 FM. WAUK.
Dedicate this song to little Junior Parker, a cousin of mine that's gone on, but we'd like to kind of carry on in his name by saying,
I don't know why I love you like I do, and all the changes that you put me through.
All right, welcome back to the Earl Ingram Show. As always, you can join us at 844-967-2789. You can text us at that same number. It's Friday. That means Friday's with my co-host, Sandy Williams. So Sandy, we're sending ships over to the Middle East, and one of our facilities in Iraq was struck. I'm assuming it's a military base or something. I don't know. We've got a ship over that's shooting down rockets in Yemen. And Sandy, we're moving somewhere. What I'm hoping we're not moving.
Well,
right,
I think
now we're not involved, but we do apparently have some troops that are preparing to actually set foot in Iran. In Israel.
Well, we're flexing our muscles, that's for sure. And I think some of that muscle flexing is designed to keep Hezbollah and other third parties from introducing themselves into the Israeli issue. And I think that I see that. I see the sense of that. I mean, that would be a spreading of the problem. It would be against our interest because it would increase the pressure on the United States to become involved.
Right.
Because we have given ourselves the role of guardian angel of Israel. And in that role, I guess we'd be expected then to come in and back them up. I think the problem, again, that we have with international affairs and with the notion that a significant percentage, a growing percentage of Americans are questioning how much support we're giving to Ukraine is the fact that we need to formulate our foreign policy in the public eye and get consensus about it. And we've gotten used to the notion of the presidential exercise of his presidential powers to use military force in the situation of American emergency. And we've expanded the definition of the kind of emergency that America has that allows us to use our troops and to send our money for military purposes around the world without building the consensus that is important. Because When you set about a policy that has a long-term consequence, like, for instance, supporting Ukraine in a war, it's that the support of Ukraine needs to be throughout the entire conflict, because if you pull the plug on support to a country in the middle of their war, you've essentially determined the outcome of the war.
You know, Sandy, Lebanon is now, what's the name of the military?
Well, Hezbollah.
Hezbollah
is in Lebanon. Yeah. And we should understand that Israel was, in fact, occupying a portion of Lebanon until not very many years ago as the result of the potential.
Hezbollah and Israel, Hezbollah's, you know, kind of lobbing some. This thing is ramping up, Sandy. And the one thing we didn't want to see happen was for Lebanon and Israel to get entangled. And now it looks like slowly but surely they're becoming entangled, and that this thing could really balloon and blow out of proportion quickly now.
Well, I think so. And I think, to me, the thrust of the American policy, if I read through the words of the Biden speech to the background behind it, is that we'd like to create pressure for a ceasefire to occur rather quickly, and one in which Hamas would be defanged of any power in the Gaza, and which might, however, lead more promptly to a two-state solution. Because whereas when this war began, I was in despair thinking, this is going to push off forever the potential for a two-state solution. And now I look at it through a different prism. And as I look at it today, I think, you know, the situation is so acute that this might be the situation in which Israelis as well as Palestinians would decide that it was time to memorialize a two-state solution. Because a two-state solution guaranteed by the world to both the Palestinian state and the Israeli state would neutralize the problems of Hezbollah and others in the Mideast, and would essentially lance what I consider an international boil, which is essentially the situation right there.
You know, Sandy, the more you look at this, and clearly Hezbollah, and so Iran is now saying you're pushing too far. Israel, you know, warning Israel, and the United States is warning Iran, and this thing just is not getting solved.
Well, you know, the complexity of the Mideast just cannot be underestimated. And, you know, we currently have a fair amount of leverage with respect to Iran, where, you know, there is the potential for reaching an accord with Iran that would reduce sanctions on Iran, which would neutralize their interest in supporting the terrorist acts of the likes of Hezbollah, which could, in fact, potentially bring Iran into a process that would support a two-state solution. There's lots of things at play in the Mideast. And my hope is that Blinken is doing an able job of pulling those various levers, because whereas this looks like a terrible situation right now, it might actually be a situation of huge opportunity because of its acuteness. And it could be a time when we could resolve a number of issues. And one of them would be to bring Iran to bay and to bring them into the fold, closer to being in the fold, which would have a lot of impacts, not only in the Mideast, but, you know, they're a huge oil supplier, and they're a significant part of the Russian strategy with respect to international oil.
All right, we've got to go to a break. 844-967-2789 is the number. We'll be right back.
Broadcasting from the City Deck Studios on North Washington Street, the talk of Green Bay, 1590 AM and 97.9 FM WGBW.
ABC News, I'm Liz Landers. A primetime address from President Biden last night calling for continued support for Israel against the militant group Hamas. He wants Congress to approve $14 billion in U.S. aid for Israel, another $60 billion for Ukraine as it fights off Russia.
The president is making this massive funding request of Congress, but for now, this isn't going to be going anywhere. The House is still at a standstill, unable to get anything done until Republicans finally settle on a new speaker.
ABC's Mary Bruce. Many believe an Israeli ground invasion into Gaza is imminent. There have been new Israeli airstrikes today, and the militant group Hezbollah has been firing rockets into Israel. Nearly 5,000 people killed on both sides in 2 weeks. On Capitol Hill, Congressman Jim Jordan says he's not finished, vowing he'll move forward with his plan to be House Speaker. Jordan failed to get enough votes in the first two rounds of voting. This is ABC News.
Talk of Green Bay News, I'm Pete Schwabe. Here's what Green Bay needs to know.
Authorities have identified a man killed in a shootout with Fond du Lac police last Saturday night. The victim is 34-year-old Kyle Massey. Massey was sitting in a car when police approached after getting a call regarding a disturbance that involved weapons. Massey and Deputy Blaine Evans exchanged gunfire that killed Massey and injured a Fond du Lac canine deputy who was part of the response team. The dog, Iroh, is expected to recover. The Wisconsin DOJ says the investigation into the event is ongoing. Manitowoc Public School District Superintendent James File is not going down without a fight. He recently ended the free lunches for all program in the district. That did not sit well with some parents who started a petition to have File fired. The petition currently has more than 830 signatures. File says ending the program would allow the school to use those funds for other needs. Pete Schwabe, WGBW 97.9 News.
The groundbreaking musical that inspires us to choose love over fear and live without regret, Rent, opens this Friday at the Racine Theater Guild. The bonds of friendship and chosen family face reality as a group of young artists and musicians struggle to create and survive. With the hardships of a penniless life, drug abuse, HIV and AIDS epidemic, social tension, and political unrest, they try to keep the flames of their dreams alive. Call the box office at 633-4218 or visit racinetheater.org for showtimes and tickets.
Have you noticed bad behavior has become normalized at interscholastic athletic events? Some fans seem angry. They lack civility toward one another. Some even get aggressive and unruly. Time out! What is going on? This has to stop. Let's not forget, school sports aren't just about winning. And they're definitely not an excuse to take your frustrations out on the official or the opponent. They're about teaching lessons like perseverance, respect, and empathy, so students can learn and grow as people, not just as players. We all have a role to play in setting a good example for our students and teaching them these important values. So fans, it's time to step up your game and behave positively at interscholastic athletic events in Wisconsin.
This message presented by the WIAA and the Wisconsin Athletic Directors Association.
We've all felt left out. And for people who move to this country, that feeling lasts more than a moment. We can change that. Learn how at belongingbeginswithus.org. Brought to you by the Ad Council.
For game, find it wherever you get your podcasts or on our website, civicmedia.us.
The Earl Ingram Show. As always, you can join us at 844-967-2789. Text us at that same number. It's Friday. It means Friday is my co-host, Sandy Williams. Let's go to Tom from West Dallas. Hey, good morning to you, Tom. You say what?
Good morning, gentlemen. I have a little lengthy question here that I'm trying to wrap my head around. And a little added from what was just said before. The Republican Party, or a bunch of them, want to cut funding for the Ukrainian war.
That's correct.
But Hamas is funded by Iran, which is friends with Russia. Now, with all the white supremacist, anti-Semitic Republicans, why are the Republicans all behind fighting Hamas, which is Iranian, then Russian-backed, and against money for Ukraine? And I really think you mentioned, gave me an idea of it the other day when we were talking about religion and that they're Muslims and Ukrainians aren't, and therefore the Republicans rather fight the Muslims, maybe. And the other quick one is Biden said $100 million to Gaza, and we're now freaking out about the $6 billion that was supposed to go to Iran, but it isn't going to Iran. It was just for humanitarian aid for Iran, which was going to be controlled by a different country where that money was getting funneled. Don't these aren't these Republicans going to start saying we're going to give this money to Hamas or to the Gaza Strip? Isn't that money going to now get funneled into weapons of war?
Hey, Tom, you got your thinking cap on this morning. Go ahead, Sandy.
Well, you know, first of all, how Hamas is funded, they undoubtedly do get money from a variety of sources in the Middle East. I think there's been always been a question as to a variety of countries, which might include, you know, wealthy people in Saudi Arabia as well. So they are funded from outside of the Gaza. There's no doubt about that. And some of that funding undoubtedly flows from Iran. The connecting all the dots between the billions or what have you, and also the question of whether we seem to vote and feel differently about fighting people who are of a different culture than ours, I suspect there is some truth to that. I mean, it might be that we find it easier to fight an enemy in the Middle East than we do to fight an enemy in the midst of Europe. But I think it's all complicated, quite frankly. And I would say that the reason we have this problem with respect to our resolve with respect to Ukraine has to do with the way we formulate our foreign policies and the extent to which we build consensus going in to something that can be requiring a long-term commitment. Israel is a little bit of a different story because I think the lobby in the United States that involves support for Israel is a very broad-scale one that's very powerful, and our relationship with Israel is unique amongst our relationship with countries in the world.
You know, Sandy, we began the show talking about why it's important that Americans, regardless of where they are, and that you know, national and international politics play a role in their lives and impact and affect, you know, things that happen to them on a daily basis. We've certainly spent the last hour of 45 minutes delving down that road. We began by talking about, you know, Tom, Dick, and Mary and what it is and what they're looking for and what they need from our government. And so I want to end the show today going back to Tom, Dick, and Mary. And after we've now interjected the international aspect of what's happening, how that's a correlation, how it ties in, and that you know, the American people have to be aware of both things, right?
I mean, well they certainly do. I mean, you know, we now have a volunteer military, and I'm confident if we went looked in the demographics of our military that a disproportionate number of our military come from localities that are not urban, not super urban areas, but actually the more rural localities around the country. So we're sending our young soldiers off to war, and the wars that we send them off to, or the wars we risk sending them off to, ought to be carefully considered. And the money we expend towards that, and the money we expend in furtherance of our foreign affairs, obviously comes from a finite pool. If nothing else, it increases the deficit, and we're all becoming increasingly aware of the finite size of the deficit that the United States can afford to have. So, yes, I mean, our local audiences ought to be very interested in the things that affect them, okay? And the things that affect them are not just the local government policies, which are very important to them, what happens at the school board, what happens at the city council, but the money that comes to those areas for child daycare, for our healthcare system. These things touch all of us, and they touch all of us, some of us most acutely, in our rural community areas. And the ability to deal with those problems adequately is substantially affected by our international policies.
And those dollars that you're talking about come from the national, the federal government.
Yes. Yes.
And so your local elected official, it's I think more critical that we understand that relationship. So when we elect people, we really need to be cognizant of who they are, what they bring to the table. Sandy, is it safe to say that?
Well, yeah. I mean, about a year ago, I think I started talking about the median family in Wisconsin, right. A $64,000, $65,000 two-income earning family living paycheck to paycheck, whose total cost, if you include health care premiums and taxes and what have you, consumes every dollar of that $64,000 and leaving them short, unable to save money for a future, unable to afford a significant healthcare problem if they've decided to have the lowest possible cost healthcare insurance, which incidentally isn't low cost. It's in the $10,000 to $18,000 a year range for lowest cost kind of healthcare coverage, and so those. You know, Tom, Dick, and Mary, we, the families of Wisconsin, living paycheck to paycheck in our communities, need to be worried about our health care, our education, our child daycare, the things that government, that the reasons we send our money to government, like was discussed by a caller earlier, so we can assemble that money and have the nice things that we need for ourselves, like education for our children, like health care for our children. You know, like retirement, adequate retirement for our futures. These things need to be addressed, need to be worried about at the local level, because at locality is that's where the tire hits the road.
Let's go to CJ. Good morning to you, CJ. You say what?
Good morning, Earl and Sandy. Just about the cost of stuff. Remember how the president was warned about all the spending and was going to cause inflation by Larry Summers.
Hey, CJ, hold on, CJ. Earlier in the show, I spoke about in the fact that, you know, Tom, Dick, and Mary were in need. And part of what President Biden spent money on was trying to come to, the rescue for Tom, Dick, and Mary. So the money that people want to say he spent that we didn't have was because Tom, Dick, and Mary, Sandy, correct me if I'm wrong, were in need.
Well, you know, I think there's been an effort to try and provide support. I think the part of Bidenomics was to focus on that. I think that, you know, CJ, we go down this road so often about talking about inflation and costs and deficits. And the fault lies at the feet of both parties, and very significantly at the feet of the Republican Party. The size of the deficits experienced under Trump were record breaking. He accounts for a quarter of the total federal debt right now, based on the 4 years of his presidency. But rather than finger pointing, what we're talking about today is really more just the question of, what is the importance of whatever policies that we adopt might be to us in our localities? And we're talking in recognition of the fact that there are finite dollars to be spent, finite deficits to be experienced, and we're encouraging all of us locally to participate in figuring out then how we allocate our money, how much we should allocate to our defense, how much we should allocate to our various programs. And that's really what we've been trying to talk about here. And we're not, at this point at least, I think, interested in a finger-pointing process about that. But are you in concurrence that that we need to be worried about from a local standpoint, the issues that come back and affect us, and in particular, come back and affect us as median families who are living paycheck to paycheck and having trouble with our health care, with our child daycare, et cetera.
Every day I go to the grocery store, I'm worried. Every day I put fuel in my vehicles.
Well, your fuel bill has been going down recently, CJ. So, I mean, fuel is a commodity. And, you know, yes, we've had inflation, but and you can go back and describe a price that existed 4 or 5 years ago. But the price of oil at the pump goes up and down with a great deal of volatility.
Yeah, yes, $2.90 now. So, but anyway, go ahead, CJ.
Well, the cost of everything, you know, again, the finger pointing is done only in one direction. And then when I try to point out facts, Sandy says that I'm being finger pointing. Well, the mere fact, we are safer and more prosperous.
All right, CJ, thank you very much for the call. You know, all you can do is try. And so we have to, it's what we've got to fix, Sandy. We've got to fix that. And
well,
and
so, I think we have to fix that kind of discussion, right, and that kind of thinking. We've got to get back to talking about the problems we face, and then we have to talk about the policies we want to use to address it. And my concern about people who want to talk campaign stuff now is what they want to do is point the finger at the problem, and then they want to name a person who's going to be elected
that's going to fix it.
Who's
going to
fix it?
Yeah.
But they never describe the policies that are going to be implemented by the person. No one could have predicted the policies that were implemented by Donald Trump, because they were few and far between, number one, but two, they were very happenstantial. And currently, if you listen to speeches on the trail, you hear nothing about policies other than attacking the deep state.
Tom, quickly.
First off, first off, we the people ultimately are the government, and we must never forget that. I got that talking point down, just like CJ's got his talking point down, but I think mine's a more unifying voice. But what's interesting, and I want to thank Sandy for this, is that I have been laser focused on the four areas, Sandy, that you talked about, with medical care, with child care, with mortgage, and with taxes. To each person that I meet, and you know, asking the question, what are we supposed to do? Earl came on the show a month ago or so, and I want to thank Earl for actually pointing out where the debt and deficit has all gone.
Hey, Tom, we got to go to break.
We'll be back.
Yeah, 844-967-2789. We'll be right back.
Have you noticed bad behavior has become normalized at interscholastic athletic events? Some fans seem angry. They lack civility toward one another. Some even get aggressive and unruly. Time out! What is going on? This has to stop. Let's not forget, school sports aren't just about winning. And they're definitely not an excuse to take your frustrations out on the official or the opponent. They're about teaching lessons like perseverance, respect, and empathy, so students can learn and grow as people, not just as players. We all have a role to play in setting a good example for our students and teaching them these important values. So fans, it's time to step up your game and behave positively at interscholastic athletic events in Wisconsin.
This message presented by the WIAA and the Wisconsin Athletic Directors Association.
We're a team that plays together. Listen, the winning will take care of itself. We just have to get everyone involved.
In interscholastic sports, we celebrate what makes every one of us unique. And in the pursuit of a common goal, everyone in the huddle, in the bleachers, and in the community comes together. This message presented by the WIAA and the Wisconsin Athletic Directors Association.
Here's your updated forecast. A mix of clouds and sun this afternoon with a high of 58. Winds out of the northwest, 10 to 15 miles an hour. Overcast tonight. Chance for scattered rain showers. Lows level off around 41. Cloudy skies expected. Tomorrow, scattered rain showers likely. High temperatures reach up to 51. Mainly sunny skies. Sunday, with daytime highs approaching 51. 56. Chance for scattered rain showers Monday. For Civic Media, I'm meteorologist Ray Miller. Right now, it's 49.
Your home for the Devil's Advocates. Weekday afternoons from 4 until 6. The Talk of Green Bay. 1590 AM and 97.9 FM WGBW. Your home of the Earl Ingram Show. Weekday mornings from 8 till 10. On The Shaw. 540 AM and 101.1 FM WAUK.
I will follow him. Follow him.
You know, your music, girl, reminds me of those mirrored balls on the ceiling that would go around at the high school dances.
Welcome back. Well, that's where it came from, right?
Yeah.
Welcome back to the Earl Ingram Show. As always, you can join us at 844-967-2789, Texas. That same number. It's Friday. That means Friday's with my co-host, Sandy Williams. Hey, Tom, go ahead, sir.
Well, at least I'm staying younger because it reminds me of Sister Act. So that's that might make me feel a little bit younger than you guys, which is good. No, I just wanted to say that, you know, those four indices that Sandy always talks about are really the most important indices in child care and health care and mortgage and taxes than anything else that we really should need to talk about. And I've been laser focused on that. And, you know, yeah, both parties are to blame in terms of the problems that we have. But I'll tell you, Jude Wininski of Reagan's era would be so proud of CJ because they yell like crazy when they are not in, you know, when the Democrats are in power about the debt and deficit, but they don't say a word when they're in power and they just keep on running it up for tax cuts for billionaires. But I also do want to say that, honestly, since we haven't heard from CJ as much, it seems like we got people like Ken from Cudahy and people like that that actually are becoming more sensible and at least are understanding that we're all human and that we're all in this together. And instead of us fighting each other and doing what Scott Walker said, divide and conquer, we're actually coming together possibly for some solutions to problems. Instead of just doing the politics thing. And I do think that we, the people, are all good people. I think the people that we put in power and the people that are being owned by the donors are the problem. That's why we got to get money out of politics at a local level and also at a federal level.
Hey, Tom, thank you very much for the call as always. So Sandy, you know, we're going to be expanding to some different markets come Monday, and they're more rural markets than we have been in. And what we want to say to you when we make this move on Monday is our focus, our concern is on all of us. And we're not unmindful of what is going on in rural America. Rural America is critical, Sandy, to who becomes the president of the United States.
Well, you know, it is America, you know, in many respects. And the image we all carry in our hearts of America includes a big slice of what is rural and not urban America, right? So many of us come from roots that were in fact rural just a couple of generations ago, and the problems that are faced by rural America, the median families and the sub-median families in rural America are exactly the same problems that are faced across the board. So, you know, I think that this show tries to focus on those issues, the issues that we should all care about, and to try and circumnavigate, you know, like our world policies have such a big impact on where we spend our money and how we spend our focus and where we focus our attention. You know, you said when we were off the air a while ago, you know, one of the things that's happened in the last week and a half is Donald Trump has disappeared from the headlines.
Right.
That's true. But also what's disappeared from the headlines over the past weeks has been child daycare, health care, the things that actually that we all worry about at home, paying our bills, saving our money for retirement, facing illness when it's in our family, paying for the education of our kids, having daycare and preschool education for our young children so that they can do well when they get to school. All these things are really important. And I think from my standpoint, the mission of this show is to keep us focused on the things that impact that, many of which are unfortunately our world affairs and the way we've decided to allocate our money.
And Sandy, I have to say that right here at home in Wisconsin, Governor Evers has been pushing for money for child daycare. And so, and he's been pushing, and there have been people who are pushing back and saying no. And so he's found some funds to at least tide or hold that over until they can find some real funds to make sure that that happens. And so people should be cognizant who's pushing against that.
Well, the median family in Wisconsin, meaning that half the families in Wisconsin are below this income, but at the median, close to the median, and below the median, you know, that the if you have 1.5 children, which of course none of us have, but that's the average, and they're in and they need child daycare, you're spending $16,000 to $18,000 a year for private child daycare, which isn't available to you on a public basis. If it was available to you on a public basis, you'd have that money currently. And you need that money because that median family has two breadwinners, not one. Both parents are going off to work every day. And so things like daycare really matter locally. And the availability of it really matters to the families in Wisconsin that are struggling to pay their bills.
So I would say to those people, whether in rural America or in the urban centers, there's one side that clearly is pushing for that. And there's another side that is saying we can't afford that. And so, you know, when you vote, your best interests, your own self-interest should come into play, isn't it?
Well, yeah. I mean, my view is that civic media, what we talk about, you and I, Earl, what people talk about politically ought to be the dinner table of the median family in America and the people below the median and above the median, what they're worried about and what they need, okay, what government needs to provide to them. And that conversation would be a lot different than the conversation that's currently being had politically, because at the very top of that would be the money we need to spend on our children, our infants, preschool children. I mean, the data is clear that preschool daycare and preschool education is fundamentally important to the success of an individual throughout their adult life. And what we need to invest in is the success of all of our citizens throughout their adult life.
Sandy, well said. I want to thank you again, as always. You and I will reconnect on Monday with a broader listening audience. Thank you, Calvin, as always. Thank you to the listening audience. Have a great weekend. We'll see you on Monday.
Follow him wherever he is.
Why are interscholastic sports called the last classroom of the day? Because they teach students important life lessons like teamwork, accountability, and perseverance. School sports are so much more than a game. They're about developing the whole person. That's why they're an essential part of every student's education.
Encourage your student to participate in the last classroom of the day. Interscholastic sports in Wisconsin. This message presented by the WIAA and the Wisconsin Athletic Directors Association.
It's never personal, only politics. The Devil's Advocates Radio Show with Dom and Crute. Weekdays from 4 until 6 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the Civic Media app. You're listening to the Talk of Green Bay. WGBW 1590 AM Denmark. W250 CV Green Bay. And always streaming on the Civic ABC Media News app.